Chapter 4. Discovery. Even before their discovery, humans have unknowingly combated bacteria. The sterilization of food with cooking and an understanding that drinking water containing alcohol was safer must have had a huge impact on human health. There was also an understanding that some diseases were infectious, though there was no known cure. Only a degree of prevention of infection could be obtained by increasing your distance from those showing symptoms. Members of the English court regularly left London when there was a plague epidemic, as they were aware that plague could be transmitted from person to person. The discovery of bacteria came from Antony van Leeuwenhoek. Van Leeuwenhoek was a Dutch trader living in late 17th century Delft. Glass lenses had been known in ancient Assyria, and they had been used in spectacles since the 13th century. With crude lenses in a microscope able to magnify about 200-fold, van Leeuwenhoek was able to describe small, single-cellular organisms, including bacteria, which he was able to draw accurately. In 1683, he wrote to the Royal Society in London, describing small individual cells from teeth scrapings. Some were spinning, and some moved rapidly through a water environment. He was also amazed by the vast numbers that were present. He called these animalcules. They were probably the first bacteria ever seen. No further significant descriptions of bacteria were made until the 19th century, when compound microscopes provided clearer images. More recently, the electron microscope has provided clear images of bacterial cells. In the second half of the 19th century, it was still thought that most food could spoil because it generated bacteria rather than becoming infected from outside. The French microbiologist Louis Pasteur exposed a broth full of nutrients to heat, known to kill bacteria. He showed that if this nutrient medium was in a glass flask with a long swan neck open to the air, then it never became contaminated with bacteria. However, if the glass was broken, the medium soon became contaminated and bacteria grew. From this he concluded that bacteria were present in the air and they were being introduced on particles of dust. The swan neck prevented the dust entering the vessel. Indeed, some of these flasks were kept for many years without becoming contaminated. This became the basis of Pasteur's germ theory of infection. Pasteur noticed that bad beer did not contain the large round yeast cells that had been responsible for the fermentation, but rather small rod-shaped bacteria. He concluded that these were responsible for the spoilage and developed the technique of heating to prevent bacterial contamination of liquids by bacteria. This technique, which we now call pasteurization, raised the temperature sufficiently to ensure that the common bacteria, which were already present in these liquids and responsible for spoilage, would be killed. As this did not involve boiling, it had a lesser impact on the taste. This was not sterilization, and it did not remove all bacteria, but rather just prolonged the shelf life of the liquid. Ignaz Semmelweis, a Hungarian doctor working in Vienna, had shown the importance of washing hands in the prevention of infection. Despite this, most surgeons still did not believe that this was an essential precaution. The Scottish surgeon, Joseph Lister, believed that Pasteur's germ theory could be exploited to prevent the human body from being infected by bacteria, and he tried to find a chemical that would kill bacteria and experimented with carbolic acid, which contained phenol. The dipping of instruments in carbolic acid prior to surgery radically reduced post-operation infection, and the swabbing of wounds with carbolic acid also reduced the incidence of gangrene. Lister was also adamant that his staff wash their hands between operations. He took Semmelweis's instructions further and insisted this was done using 5% carbolic acid. The germ theory of bacteria was, by the 1870s, well established, and bacteria were seen as major causes of disease. Pasteur demonstrated that gangrene, an infection of dying tissue, occurred in the absence of oxygen, and he was one of the first to show that there were anaerobic bacteria as well as those that require oxygen. Pasteur had also been interested in vaccines, and he had found that bacteria he had cultured in the laboratory, when injected, often did not cause infection in laboratory animals. Furthermore, when he did subsequently inject animals with fresh bacteria, he found that the animals were in some way protected. We now call these cultured bacteria attenuated or non-virulent, and Pasteur called the process of pre-injection of attenuated bacteria for subsequent protection vaccination. He used this term in honour of Edward Jenner's immunisation against smallpox with the structurally related cowpox virus. Pasteur's innovation was to use the same bacterium for immunisation as that which causes the disease. The German scientist Robert Koch was sceptical about Pasteur's ability to attenuate bacteria to render them suitable for vaccination. He believed that the properties of bacteria were permanent and disavowed Pasteur's proposal that variations in a bacterium's virulence could explain why epidemics could occur, as the virulence of the bacterium temporarily increased. Koch's major contributions were to explore the role of individual bacteria as the sole cause of specific diseases. He developed techniques for isolating individual bacteria, particularly by the use of agar, a substance derived from seaweed that solidified media, thus producing a nutrient matrix on which individual bacterial cells could form discrete colonies. The circular glass trays he used, petri dishes, were named after his assistant. This was an enormous step forward and allowed the isolation of individual bacterial species. He and his team were able to isolate the causative bacteria of diphtheria, typhoid, pneumonia, gonorrhea, meningitis, leprosy, bubonic plague, and tetanus. Koch's most important discoveries were the bacteria responsible for anthrax and tuberculosis. With the former, he was able to show that the anthrax bacillus was able to transfer from animal to animal. He noticed, however, that it did not survive long outside the animal and instead formed spores. He found spores to be metabolically inactive and that they could survive for long periods in soil, changing into active virulent bacteria on entering a new host. His techniques for bacterial isolation also identified the bacterium responsible for tuberculosis, Mycobacterium tuberculosis. This was a major medical discovery, as tuberculosis was responsible for more than 10% of premature deaths at the time. By the end of Koch's research career, at the start of the 20th century, many of the major bacterial species responsible for infection had been identified. Although bacteria were evidently involved in the process of disease, it had not been clear whether they were solely responsible. Koch's isolation techniques allowed him to prepare pure cultures of bacteria, so he devised criteria to determine whether an individual bacterial species was the cause of an infection. These were known as Koch's postulates. Originally, they were 1. The bacteria could be isolated from the animal suffering from the disease. 2. The bacteria could be cultured in the laboratory. 3. When the cultured bacteria were introduced in another animal, they should cause the same disease. 4. The same bacteria can be re-isolated from the second infected animal and shown to be identical to original bacteria. If these postulates could be followed, it would be possible to state that the individual bacterium was the cause of the disease and the disease was infectious. Koch's postulates are still used today, but they have often had to be modified, particularly the first postulate, as many bacteria can just be carried by the first hosts who become asymptomatic carriers, rather than causing an infection. An example of this may be the bacteria that cause cholera, Vibrio cholerae, or dysentery, Shigella dysenteriae. In these cases, the first postulate has to be abandoned. Furthermore, the introduction of pure bacterial cultures did not always precipitate disease in test animals, not least for the fact that the ability of a bacterium to cause disease is strongly influenced by the immune status of the new host. As we shall see later, a new generation of bacteria, now known to cause disease but only in immunocompromised patients, cannot be identified by Koch's postulates. Causative bacteria were found for a number of different infections, including Streptococcus pneumoniae for pneumonia by Leo Escolar in 1881, and Haemophilus influenzae for bronchitis by Richard Pfeiffer in 1892. The latter had been discovered during an influenza outbreak and was thought to be the causative organism of influenza. Koch's postulates could not demonstrate this, and it was subsequently found that both these respiratory pathogens were actually opportunistic, only causing disease in patients whose immune system was already compromised by another infection, for example by the influenza virus. Escherichia coli, often shortened to E. coli, was one of the most important bacterial species identified at the time. Discovered in 1885, it was named after its discoverer, Theodor Escherich. Its importance has been not only because it is a pathogen, which can cause a variety of different symptoms, nor because it is one of the most important bacteria commonly found in the human gut, but rather because it has become the main scientific tool for studying bacterial structure, genetics, and virulence. The list of bacterial discoveries is vast. Bacteria can survive in virtually every environment on Earth, in the extremes of temperature, pressure, and acidity in the environment. The ability to survive extreme acid conditions is not confined to environmental bacteria. Gastric ulcers were thought to result from stress or eating spicy food, but in 1982, Robin Warren and Barry Marshall of the University of Western Australia identified a small helical bacterium, Helicobacter pylori, in the stomach. It had previously been believed that no bacterium could live in the highly acidic stomach. Warren tested their hypothesis that this bacterium was responsible for gastric ulcers by drinking a culture of Helicobacter pylori. Within 5 days, he developed the symptoms of gastritis, which he eventually eradicated with a course of antibiotics. This was a hugely important discovery, not only because it identified a new species of bacteria, but also because ulcers were finally able to be eradicated. Because of its predisposition to cause ulcers, and the subsequent risk that this damage may lead to cancer, Helicobacter pylori has been identified as a possible carcinogen which should be eradicated. Other, previously unidentified bacteria were identified in the final quarter of the 20th century. Closely related to Helicobacter pylori are the bacteria of the genus Campylobacter. This organism was first isolated in 1972 by de Keyser and Butzler, who examined the feces of a young woman who had severe symptoms of diarrhea and fever. It was then found to be responsible in about 5% of children with severe diarrheal symptoms. Two species were subsequently identified, Campylobacter jejuni and Campylobacter coli. Campylobacter jejuni was subsequently found to have the ability to become invasive. Rarely, it could spread through the body and was not just confined to infection of the gastrointestinal tract. By the 1980s, Campylobacter jejuni infections had become well recognised and were shown to be the major cause of bacterial enterocolitis. Gastrointestinal bacteria have not been the only recent bacterial identifications. In July 1976, a large number of the veterans attending a convention of the American Legion at the Bellevue Hotel in Philadelphia fell ill with pneumonia symptoms. Over 200 were given medical treatment, and 34 died from this unknown disease. These were reported first to the Pennsylvania Department of Health, and the outbreak was then referred to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, in Atlanta. They considered that the environment of the hotel might be the cause, rather than human-to-human spread, as there was no subsequent infection away from the hotel. Furthermore, some pedestrians walking past the hotel also became ill. The lungs of patients who had died of the mysterious disease were examined, and nothing could be found except some rod-shaped bacteria which were ignored at the time. With all subsequent investigations proving fruitless, Joseph McDade at CDC decided to re-examine these rod-shaped bacteria. He produced a serological test for this organism and found that the blood of all the sufferers had antibodies to this bacterium. This previously unknown organism was named Legionella pneumophila. It was living in the water cooling part of the hotel's air conditioning system and was thus spread throughout the hotel. The disease has been called Legionnaire's disease. Legionnaire's disease is an example of environmental bacteria that have previously had no major contact with man, which is probably why we were unaware of them. However, when we alter the environment in which we live, we can change it sufficiently to allow previously harmless bacteria to prosper. Legionella pneumophila is a widely distributed bacterium that lives in water all over the world, especially in temperatures above 25 degrees Celsius. It is completely harmless unless it has access to lungs. This did not happen until we sprayed or atomized water. Thus, Legionnaire's disease is solely a product of modern living. Of course, many regulations have been introduced to reduce its impact, but outbreaks still occur, and approximately 500 people become infected every year in England and Wales. The isolation of new bacteria resulting from changing lifestyles increased concern about E. coli. Although some of these bacteria are regular residents of our gastrointestinal tract, there are some types of this bacterium that cause serious symptoms. It is the most common cause of travellers' diarrhoea. More serious is the emergence of new strains of E. coli, which were previously unknown. The most notorious of these is E. coli 0157H7. The number refers to its serotype, and it is often abbreviated to E. coli 0157. Its importance lies in its capability to cause very severe hemorrhagic diarrhea, which can result in kidney failure. Rarely these bacteria can be spread from person to person, but usually outbreaks result from contaminated meat or vegetables. It was first isolated in a single patient in 1975, but it was first shown to be responsible for an outbreak in 1982, caused by the ingestion of contaminated hamburgers. Most gastrointestinal bacteria are spread by the fecal-oral route, and E. coli 0157H7 is no exception, except that the bacteria originate predominantly from the feces of cattle. Without causing the animal any symptoms, E. coli 0157H7 reside in the rectum of cattle, probably within the majority of herds in the United Kingdom. The reason why they should reside there now and did not in the past is possibly related to changes in animal husbandry. Since the Second World War, cattle have been fed a variety of experimental diets. One of these appears to have influenced the microenvironment within the rectum. Cattle continue to shed these bacteria in the feces, and the meat obtained from them becomes contaminated. Only a few E. coli 0157H7 strain types appear to be virulent to humans. In these cases, if the meat is contaminated, while it is uncooked, it can pass the bacteria to other food products, particularly during preparation. There are still probably many more bacteria that have yet to be discovered. If there are more bacteria in a kilogram of soil than there are humans on the planet, it is highly likely that we are currently unaware of the majority of bacteria species that exist. It is estimated that we know fewer than 5% of all the bacteria present. Because of their direct involvement with us, the bacteria that we are most knowledgeable about are those that infect us or influence our lives. Furthermore, the speed at which bacteria are able to evolve implies that we shall never know the full extent of this, the most prevalent biomass on the planet.